Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and this morning, President Trump is on his way to Quebec City for the G7 summit, where he's expected to get a chilly reception and give one back. He's already announced an early departure tomorrow morning to go to the North Korea summit in Singapore, understandably, but also maybe he doesn't want to be there for the final communique that comes at the end of these things. At issue most immediately is his trade policy and the tariffs that he's announced and threatened. And he's been in a Twitter spat with both Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and French President Emmanuel Macron. One of Macron's tweets, "No leader is eternal," referring to the need to honor agreements made by predecessors. And of course, Trump is pulling out of the Iran deal. Trump is pulling out of the Paris Climate Accord. And I haven't seen reaction yet, so we'll get some, to President Trump's surprising remark as he left Washington that the group should take Russia back into the G7 and let it become the G8 again. Russia was expelled over the annexation of Crimea back in 2014. So again, we have the question on the table, Trump is being soft on Russia? Why is that? So to talk about all of this and other news, including their endorsement in the New York State governor's race, is the editor and publisher of The Nation, Katrina VandenHeuvel. Hi, Katrina. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you. I think Justin Trudeau gets it. No leader is eternal. This too shall pass. On the Russia question, I think the Mueller investigation must proceed to a secure end. We must have secure elections. But I think we also need national security. And I do think the escalating Cold War with Russia is very dangerous. We confront escalating nuclear proliferation and also a series of issues out there in our unstable, chaotic world that demand a working partnership, not a friendship with Russia, if we're going to resolve Syria and other crises. Trump shoots from the hip, but anything he says about Russia is obviously taken with a grain of salt. But I think more serious people who study this issue do think it's a mistake to isolate Russia. And it also, in my mind, allows too many in this country to ignore other pressing issues. I think the 2016 election and its outcome had a lot to do with voter suppression, with dark money, with Supreme Court decisions that have empowered oligarchs of America. And I think those issues don't get as much attention because the Russia investigation sucks up the oxygen. That's my point of view, but
yeah,
I do think...
And it's interesting that this is the breaking news just before you were going to come on, President Trump saying that about readmitting Russia to the G7 and making it the G8 again, because our listeners may not know that you are, a kind of, journalistic icon from the left, but you've also been a critic of the left's new Cold War with Russia.
Part of it, Brian, I have to say, is I've spent 35 years reporting from Russia, and I have seen what Cold War does to hurt NGOs, independent media, worked with feminist groups in Russia, and it narrows the space for partnership, for dissent. And I think we need another way. We do need to combat attacks on the legitimacy of the Mueller investigation. But I will say, I did MSNBC last night on Chris Hayes' show. I hired him when he was 28 to be a Washington editor of The Nation, admire him. He's done a lot on immigration. We talked about Scott Pruitt and the real scandal of someone who's heading an institution, the EPA he wants to gut. But I will say, MSNBC, it is the kind of left progressive outpost, and it is on any given night devoting so much attention to Russia and the investigation that it's not giving attention to what we might now talk about, which are the insurgent progressive forces that, with obstacles and zigs and zags, are really beginning to fill the political space in this country. And if not winning today, the issues that have been at the forefront of the progressive agenda, whether it's Medicare for All, fight for 15 minimum wage, free higher ed, fair trade, criminal justice reform, these are issues that anyone in 2020 running for president is going to have to contend with very clearly. Mm-hmm. They are not off the radar as they were maybe a decade ago.
And we'll get to your endorsement of Cynthia Nixon in a second, but just to complete the thought on Russia, they were ejected from the G8 after the forced annexation of Crimea from Ukraine. Do you think that was an overreaction, and do you support allowing them back in?
Well, I certainly don't support illegal annexation of territory. I don't think we speak, there is a hypocrisy. I mean, what we've done with Iraq, and there have been some other instances. I think we need to find a way to resolve the Ukraine situation. There's something called the Minsk Accords on the table, which Germany, France, Russia, Ukraine are privy part of, and that has been just put aside. I just think, Brian, and this I have to say on another front, I side with progressives in the Democratic Party who were critical of the Democratic establishment the other day, Chuck Schumer and a few others, who said to Trump, if you don't get this point on the North Korea deal, it's a lousy deal. Well, I think we need to negotiate in tough and smart ways. June 10th, 1963, John F. Kennedy gave a speech at American University where he spoke of negotiating from strength but always trying to seek an alternative to war, peace. And I think that has been lost from the political imagination, the idea of using every possible tool to avert needless war. The Nation was one of the few publications to vigorously oppose the Iraq War. John McCain, in his recent memoir, now says it was a disaster. It was a disaster, and it has destabilized the Middle East. We need to find alternatives. So in that context, I think tough, smart diplomacy, and I commend someone your listeners should know more about, Ro Khanna, Democratic congressman from California, who, you know, criticized the Democratic establishment for taking such a hawkish stance. And I think we can do better.
And I guess you agree with Nick Kristof's column in the New York
absolutely.
Times yesterday that some of our listeners may have seen, where he criticized Democrats for opposing Trump even when he's advancing peace by meeting with Kim Jong-un as opposed to just threatening him.
Yeah, I do, but I do. I also agree with what Nicholas Kristof wrote, which is that the president of South Korea, Moon, deserves a Nobel Peace Prize, probably above Mr. Trump, for the tenacity with which he's tried to keep this deal together. When people like John Bolton, who your listeners know is now NSC advisor to Donald Trump, he has considered treaties and diplomacy subversive acts for the last few decades. So I think any countervailing power to Mr. Bolton is needed and necessary.
So listeners, your calls, comments, and questions for Katrina Vandenhoevel, editor and publisher of The Nation, on what she was originally going to come on and talk about, and we're going to do right now, which is The Nation's endorsement of Cynthia Nixon in the New York State Democratic gubernatorial primary, but also what she's been talking about so far, including what The Nation sometimes calls Russophobic insanity. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. So you're endorsing Cynthia Nixon. Tell us why.
Okay, so, you know, New Yorkers deserve a true progressive champion. For 8 years, Andrew Cuomo has broken his promises on a series of issues, kept the Republicans in power with the independent state committee, blocking critical legislation. The key thing is the Nation has a long history of supporting insurgent progressive candidates. We care about the fight within the Democratic Party, what it stands for. It is a long-shot campaign. But thanks to the Cynthia effect, Governor Cuomo has moved to the left. In a sense, Cynthia Nixon, actor and activist, has already pushed Andrew Cuomo to the left. But I think in this era of Donald Trump in the White House, Brian, Republicans in control of Congress, the states can be real laboratories of progressive reforms that can work for working people. Cynthia Nixon is an activist. She's, of course, an actor. She's using her celebrity, but she has been involved with education equity, transportation issues, housing issues, and she has the life experience to be a governor of and for the people. Of course, there is real suspicion of those without government experience, particularly in light of Trump and the White House. But I think it's time for a change. No more status quo politics. And she's laying out some very serious issue-oriented politics. She came in May 18th to speak to the editors of The Nation. We had an hour-long conversation, very focused on housing issues, education issues, transportation issues. And she's traveling upstate in rigorous ways, trying to connect with all communities of New York. It's a long shot, but it is one that The Nation has staked its endorsement on.
Now, some of the supporters of Governor Cuomo would say this is the wrong fight for progressives to be picking right now, and there are a number of similar ones across the country that might be self-defeating, and that if you look at Cuomo's record and go down the list of the big items that progressives call for in national policy, he's been doing them in New York State: $15 minimum wage, statewide universal pre-K, complete statewide ban on fracking, all the gun controls that people are trying to get in at the national level. He led in New York State after Newtown, family and medical leave. That's a whopping record of big ticket progressive items. What would you say?
I would say that several of those items you've mentioned were a result of a previous candidate running for governor, Zephyr Teachout, who had her challenge 4 years ago pushed, I would argue, Governor Cuomo to change his mind on fracking, to move him, though out of respect he does speak of his father's legacy when he talks of why he adopted a $15 state minimum wage. But I think on the big, big issues, and those are not to be slighted, and Cynthia Nixon speaks very powerfully of Governor Cuomo's positions on same-sex marriage. She is a lesbian. Andrew Cuomo, I would argue, is consistently disappointed, often standing in the way of those fundamental economic issues. He's been the author of a series of austerity measures that balance the state's budget on the backs of public servants and the poor, rather than raising taxes on New York's flourishing millionaire class. He's been a foe of real campaign finance reform and a cheerleader for charter schools. On the culture of corruption, which, by the way, Senator Elizabeth Warren is now making a key issue of hers, you know, he abolished the Moreland Commission. Your listeners may know it. He did it in a way which was sort of saying the state is me. He abolished it before it could finish its investigation. And finally, he let Republicans in the state Senate draw their own district lines and readily accepted contributions from Koch brothers and other GOP mega donors. I mean, someone else The Nation endorsed before pivoting to endorse Hillary Clinton in the general was Bernie Sanders. He spoke the other day of how, you know, until you really de-rig and de-tether from the big money, which Andrew Cuomo hasn't, he has fewer small donors than most Democratic candidates, it's very hard to really fight for the big issues such as Medicare for All or real campaign finance reform.
Jim in the West Village, you're on WNYC with Katrina Vandenhoevel, editor and publisher of The Nation. Hi, Jim.
Well, first, I just want to say thank you for pointing out that the president of South Korea is the person that really does deserve the Nobel Peace Prize, and his tenacity has kept this together. I mean, most people, the media do not give him that credit. But more importantly, I wanted to speak to you about the Cynthia Nixon endorsement by The Nation. I think Cynthia Nixon is a great actor. I think this is a terrific role for her, but she has no experience. And this fight between de Blasio and Cuomo seems to have put a cloud over who can win. There was a mayor in upstate New York, a woman, a progressive, who was going to announce for mayor to run against Cuomo.
Right, right.
And all the air was sucked out of the room by celebrity announcement.
Stephanie Miner is that mayor.
Yeah, no, I admire that mayor. But, you know, Cynthia Nixon is also, with all due respect, she's an activist. A long time. She's worked for nearly two decades with the Alliance for Quality Education, advocating for increased equitable funding of public schools. Sure, she's won Emmys, Tonys, Grammys. She's played Eleanor Roosevelt and Nancy Reagan. But, you know, she has, let's step back from it. She has the life experience to be governor. She's the daughter of a single mother, was educated in the city's public schools, has worked continuously since the age of 12, paid dues to four different unions. Experience is important, but if experience is also being beholden or mortgaged to entrenched interest in political machines that dominate the state government, you're less likely to shake up business as usual. One question which came up at the nation's meeting with her, she spoke fluidly about issues, but you also need to know how to use power and how to build coalitions. And I think she's capable and working on that. Joan Walsh, our national affairs correspondent, had an article on the same issue with our endorsement. And she raises questions raised by voters and others in New York politics about how ready is Cynthia Nixon? That is a legitimate question. I know that she is working on a tax plan. She has a brain trust. She's drawing on smart people. And the fight with Mayor de Blasio, we asked her about that. She says she speaks to him maybe four times a year. I don't know if that's true. But this is not de Blasio's stalking horse proxy, even though she is close to the mayor. That fight is a very difficult fight between the mayor and Governor Cuomo. I think it hurts the city and the state. Ironically, my father, who was in New York state politics for many years, was asked by, I believe it was Mayor Lindsay, to form a committee to negotiate relations between the city and state when Nelson Rockefeller was governor. And I believe my father asked Mario Cuomo to be on that commission. I believe it was Mario Cuomo's first government position in New York State.
Boris in Flatbush, you're on WNYC. Hello, Boris.
Hi, how are you, Brian? So I have the following question for Katrina VandenHeuvel. So the listeners are hearing the seemingly even-tempered view of Russia and the dangers of a new Cold War. And they're warning against getting obsessed with Trump-Russia scandals. They should also keep in mind that your husband, Professor Stephen Cohen, is a straight-up Kremlin propagandist and the leading voice in academia charged with parodying every conspiracy theory and talking point dictated by Vladimir Putin. And I'd like to ask you to comment on how his views influence yours.
Well, first of all, I really fear for our country and republic when such smears and defamatory comments fill the airways. My husband has been teaching Soviet history and politics at Princeton and NYU for the last 40 years. He wrote a biography of a man who was shot by Stalin. Steve could not get a visa to the Soviet Union for 4 years because he was working closely with dissidents to bring out literature. He was very, and we both are close to Mikhail Gorbachev, who introduced democratization before, I would argue, Yeltsin and Putin have de-democratized that country. But I would also say, have you no sense of decency? We need a debate in this country. To lock down debate by calling people apologists is not in the American tradition. You sound like Joe McCarthy and or Roy Cohn, who, of course, more and more get to know in this Trump era. If you can argue with me on the merits, but to call my husband a Putin apologist is, I think, indecent and un-American.
And he hung up, so he's not going to stay around and argue with you in the merits. You're also allowed to agree with your husband on things
without saying that you, as a woman, have no agency. You know, I was going
to
say one thing that interests me, and I've confronted this both, left, right, center, is the fact that I write about these issues, whether it's both covering reporting on what's going on inside Russia, independent media, feminist groups, or about the dangers of a new Cold War. I do have my own point of view. I agree with my husband maybe 84% of the time, but to take agency away from me as a woman, but also as someone who's been editor of The Nation for more than 20 years, is, I think, really ironic in this Me Too moment.
Janet in Westchester, you're on WNYC with Katrina VandenHeuvel. Hi.
Hi, how are you? I'm glad you were able to communicate. I agree with everything you say, especially about the Democrats and the Republicans that they should get together instead of fighting one another. Because there's a lot of chaos in this country. Both together, regardless of the party, we can build more things. We can help each other and address all these issues that are so important to the American community. However, I disagree with you about the Nobel Prize, because if somebody should deserve the Nobel Prize, it would be Trump, because the man is working so hard, despite everyone against him, despite all the things that are happening, the talks and the, you know, they don't display what right. what he does or the things that are happening in this country, the good. But they always, if you say something, they take it out of place. And by the way, I'm neutral. I'm not a Democrat or the Republican. So I see both sides. And let the man run the country and respect. He says it's our president, whatever, good or bad.
No,
it seems
you.
That he's not,
thank
he's
you
not
for
doing
you.
Anything.
Janet,
you know,
thank you very
no,
much.
Thank you for your comments.
Going to get a
no,
response.
I appreciate that. I just wanted to say about Cynthia Nixon and experience, I'm probably going to get this wrong, but, you know, not to compare her politically to Ronald Reagan, but
uh-oh.
He wasn't, I'm not comparing her politically, I'm simply saying I believe Ronald Reagan was an actor, and he became governor of California. Cynthia Nixon is someone who, you know, has had the experience of being an activist. And what strikes me about this year, Brian, is how many people, particularly the year of fired up women, how many women are running for the first time. Now, of course, to run for governor is tough. This is uphill. But there are women who have had experience maybe as a waitress or a teacher. Teachers are running because they're fed up with the defunding of schools. So I do think experience is important. Life experience is important, too. And I think, you know, the other thing I might say, and in fact, I talked to Governor Cuomo about this a few years ago. You know, the whole issue of leadership, real leadership might require compromise, but it cannot be defined by compromise. And I just worry, and this is why the Working Families Party, founded in 1998 in this good state, to move the Democratic Party to progressive positions on particularly economic justice and racial justice. But groups like the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, Our Revolution, Democracy for America, and plus some upstart New York Democratic clubs like the Village Independent Democrats have endorsed Cynthia Nixon. So I just wanted to, you know, say that it's you know, unleashing the imagination. It is an uphill battle. But in a time of insurgency and in a time when populism of an inclusive kind, not a reactionary kind like Trump's and the alt-right, demand and deserve a hearing. Mm. I think this is an endorsement for its time.
Let me get your thought on one other thing before you go. As Trump is heading now to Quebec City for that G7 summit and calling for Russia to be re-included and make it the G8 again, despite its annexation of Crimea, that caused it to get kicked out in 2014. It seems like he, even if we accept all of your analysis of the complexity of how we should see Russia rather than the reflexive new Cold War, that he's elevating the interests of a country that in many ways our adversary, whilst having not much good to say about our allies, these countries who are at the G7. And Macron's tweets, one of them this week, was the American president may not mind being isolated, but neither do we mind signing a six-country agreement if need be. And that was with respect to trade, which is another issue on which you may actually agree with Trump.
Well, let me step back, and I think, first of all, I think Crimea, I think there should be a set of elections in Crimea. If there was more opening and oxygen, the UN could hold a second referendum or put that aside. It is the case, Trump not only with Russia, but what about Saudi Arabia? I mean, there are certain countries which are not necessarily allies, and he elevates these countries often because of personal or business relations. I mean, this is a pay-for-play administration. I wish Europe would seize this moment to find its own way in the world. Europe should be more independent and, you know, chart its own course, particularly as you outlined at the top, Brian. This president is withdrawing from civilizing agreements like the Iran nuclear deal or certainly the Paris Climate Accord. So if Europe could find its own way, and not just rhetorically and not just Macron's tweets, I think it would be a very positive thing, particularly with a Trump in the White House.
Katrina Vandenhoevel, editor and publisher of The Nation, thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.